Now, if the nobility was the governing class of Europe, and generally, of course, served kings and so forth in various governing capacities, as we've seen, the clergy shared in the governing of Europe. Now, they shared in the governing of Europe in a number of different ways. Occasionally, members of the clergy were assigned important offices by kings. Occasionally, as we've had occasion to see, members of the clergy were key advisors to kings. Occasionally, members of the clergy wrote things, for example, that then became very influential. We've encountered each of those kinds of examples in some of our earlier lectures. In one way or another, the clergy played a very important role in defining the ideology that was dominant in most of Europe through the 13th century. We're going to see in later lectures what began to happen in Europe when people began to imagine government as having other than religious ends and religious means to those ends. Less abstractly, we'll see the first faint beginnings of the secular state. But as long as the state was defined essentially in religious terms, Christendom, as an Augustinian city of God come down to earth, then, not surprisingly, members of the clergy were going to have a very, very prominent role in talking about and in influencing that society. Now, clerics generally had very good social and institutional connections. They come, after all, from the same families as their fathers, their uncles, their brothers, their cousins, their nephews, held all the important jobs all over Europe. Not surprisingly, therefore, the clergy share the culture, the values, the outlook of the nobility. We may encounter worldly clergymen in medieval literature and think, these people are a little bit strange. They don't seem to be sort of living a particularly holy life. Well, they were living the kind of life that people of their class lived. Not better, not worse. Clerical society was hierarchical. The church itself was organized. Popes, archbishops, bishops, priests. The clergy promoted hierarchical ideas in society. Kings, those who served the kings, those who served them, and so on, down through a hierarchy. The clergy did much to anchor ideas and reinforce aristocratic ideas of rank and status. The clergy also sought constantly to reform itself, and in reforming itself, to bring reform to the wider society. We saw, for example, how important was the role played by the clergy in the reform movements at the time of the Carolingians. If, to be sure, then the great impetus came from the Carolingian family itself, clerics nonetheless played decisive roles. In later generations, the polarity, in a sense, is reversed. The clergy now becomes the great driving force of reform, trying then to get ruling families, families like the Carolingians in later times, to follow them in their reform efforts. In the year 910, for example, in Burgundy in southeastern France, a monastery was founded by William of Aquitaine, and it was given a very interesting quality, a distinctive quality, at the moment of its foundation. It was free of all lay control. Many monasteries were heavily influenced by the family of by the family that had founded them. This monastery was created free of all lay control and placed under the obedience of the Pope. Over time, and in particular because a number of its abbots were sort of European-wide figures, figures of enormous prominence, of enormous prestige, Cluny began to exert a tremendous degree of influence over monasteries all over Europe. Now, from Gorze, which is in Lorraine, from Hirtshals in Germany, from Fleury in the center of France, from Worcester in England, and from other places as well, in the 10th and across the 11th century, very powerful currents of religious reform were spawned by monastic houses. And these had influences very widely in the church, and they had influences in the wider lay society as well. Now, these reformers sometimes said that the essential end of religious officers, but perhaps even of the wider society, was to abandon the world, to leave the world, to leave behind all of the world's troubles. Sometimes what they called for was freedom for the church, for the church, that the church should be uncoupled from domination by kings and dukes and counts and other powerful and important and influential people. Others said, no, the role of the clergy should really be to engage the world, to engage the powerful, to move the powerful, to get the powerful to use their authority and their influence to change things for the better. In other words, some of the kinds of debates that existed in antiquity, some of the kinds of debates that exist in the Carolingian world persist in Europe of the High Middle Ages. There's a powerful current of reform, some disagreement over exactly what reform might mean, exactly who ought to do it, and exactly what the outcome ought to look like.